Okay, Tina, it's all yours.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tina B. I am a recovered alcoholic and sugar addict. Hi to you guys that I know, and nice to meet you, the people that I don't know. I have two home groups. My first home group is a Monday night women's meeting that meets at 7 p.m. in Salt Lake City, Utah. And my other home group is the noon Pacific BBA meeting. I usually go to Tuesday and or Wednesday meetings, depending on the week. So I'm just so thrilled to have such a wide community of people in recovery, you know, not just from alcohol, but from all addictions. I'm going to start with a story, and then we're going to end up on page 100. And we'll see if they weave together or not. I don't know. My sister is in recovery as well, and she has a 3-year-old son. And some of you might have heard this story, but there's more to it. And he is, you know, he's a very boisterous boy, you know, and he's been hitting, and which is pretty normal for 3-year-olds. And so they're trying all sorts of different things to help him. And my sister called me up, you know, I think she was more needed to just have someone listen to all the things that they had tried. And I gave my 2 cents worth. And she said, one thing that really helps is prayer. And so they'll do things like, you know, God, please help Ben when he's feeling angry and not to hit his sister. Those are the type of prayers that they have. And he is also afraid of getting his face wet right now. And so my sister very gently puts 2 inches of water in the tub and, you know, washes his hair very gently, you know, cups the water gently over him. The whole time he's screaming. And he says, God, please be with me in my afraid. And I was like, oh my God, that's the spiritual journey right there. God, please be with me in my afraid. And I have just, it has just been a journey with just that statement of the last week or so. But she texted me, I'll read the text to you. She texted me last night or this morning. It says, this was last night's hair washing prayer from my nephew, Ben. Dear God, please help me wash my hair and not kick my mom. And, you know, and I think that, I just think that that is just such an honest way to show up to prayer, you know, and out of the mouths of babes, right? You know, God, please help me, you know, whatever it is, you know, whatever it is I'm struggling with, you know, please help me with that because I feel alone. You know, and always goes down to, you know, when I get down through all my fears, you know, that big fear grid we do in BBA, you know, it goes down to that I'm alone, that there is no God. And, you know, please help me, God, please help me know that you're here with me in this difficult conversation I need to have with whomever. You know, God, please help me find clarity in my day, you know, that what you would have me be, what you would have me do. God, please help me get these dishes done. God, please help me not be resentful that I'm the one that does all the dishes. And God, please help me to ask for help with the dishes instead of being resentful. You know, that's also the prayer. I mean, and there's, when I realized that this idea of prayer was so available to me, and I just didn't know it. You know, and that's the thing. I don't know if it's really taught in, I'm not sure which fellowships you go to, but in AA, they don't really necessarily always teach us how to pray and what to pray for. And it's really the small things. And, you know, I'm just so glad that I now have that resource that I didn't have before. So I always felt like I needed to be protected from you or anything else in the world. And when that protection, that stress of that protection gets too much, I drink because the pressure's too much. I can't take it. And the world is too big. And you know, and then also with any of the other addictions that I deal with. So that's the story. But we're on the bottom of page 100. It says, if you have been successful in solving your own domestic problems, tell the newcomer's family that was accomplished. In this way, you can set them on the right track without becoming critical of them. And this is, you know, I share my experience without having to fix them. And let them just be, and let them love them the way that, you know, let me love them the way, God, please help me love this newcomer, this person in front of me, the way that I need to be loved by you. The story of how you and your wife settled your difficulties is worth any amount of criticism. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics, addicts are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. You know, and I know that this dealing with my sugar addiction is that there is no place in the world where there is not sugar. And so I got to be in a place of neutrality around these things. I mean, it's just, it's everywhere. And when I leave my home and go out into the world, it's so prevalent. And it's actually that way. I live in Utah, which is, you know, there's a lot of LDS community here, and LDS don't drink. And so there's a lot of funny liquor laws around here. So when I leave Utah and I go into a convenience store in Texas or California, and there are literally walls of beer. And I'm like, yeah, this is why I need to be in a place of neutrality, because I never know when that compulsion will come back. So I have to be in that place of neutrality. We must not have it in our homes. You know, my family has sugar. You know, they have dessert every Sunday night. My father brings it over. You know, I have to be in that place of neutrality. I can't expect them to change just because of that I need to change. I need God to come in and change me. And the same with alcohol. You know, I regularly serve alcohol in my home, actually. I don't keep it in my home, but I serve it when I have guests. The funniest thing is my in-laws, they're moderate drinkers. And so I bought some beer and some wine for them for afternoon, which is something that they partake in regularly. And it got to be like 4 o'clock, and I was feeling like super anxious about the fact that they didn't have any alcohol in front of them. Like, it was 4 o'clock. I'm like, that's happy hour, right? That's officially happy hour. And I said, I didn't say this. They didn't realize that I was anxious, but I said, oh, would you like some beer or wine now? And they're like, oh, we're not ready yet. And I was like, yeah, that's why I belong in 12-step recovery. Because I was concerned that my fear was that they were choking on the fact that they weren't drinking. And even after 31 years of sobriety, that's still where I go. You know, that I'm like, they must need to drink. It's 4 o'clock. That's how I would. It's so good to have moderate people in my life to show me what the difference is. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. And again, you know, I need to be in this place of neutrality. On the other hand, when I am recovering phase, that it's okay if I don't recover at the bar. And this came to me this past winter when I was kind of dealing with the adrenaline piece of all of our addictions. And I was in a job that was just high stress and high adrenaline. And I realized that I don't have to get sober at the bar, that it's okay for me to take a moment, get some recovery, get God into my life so that I can be in that place of neutrality. And that's okay too, right? And there's always a balance there. But if I'm blocking off the world that God provides us in order to protect my recovery, then I don't think I'm spiritually fit. It says, we meet these conditions every day. And here's a promise, right? An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. And how my alcoholic mind still wants to control my reality. You know, and I think that's always what I've wanted, is I don't like reality. I don't like how I'm feeling. I don't like what you're doing to me in any way, shape, or form. So I'm going to change reality. I did that at first by drinking. You know, that's a really great way to escape reality. And then I learned some nice handy emotional intelligence so that I could try and control and fix you. And, you know, again, you know, I'm God has called me to just live in the world, playing the role he assigns. It says, goes on to say, there's something the matter with his spiritual status. And I think that that's a good question to bring into our step 10 and step 11, you know, step 11 at night, you know, how is my spiritual status? You know, it's another way to say it. How is my spiritual status today? How did I show up to the world? Did I show up resentful? Did I show up fearful? Did I show up? Did it? And not only did I show up that way, but did it like show up in my consciousness? Because it starts out as whispers. It doesn't, it's not the first fear that leads me down this, whatever path to the addictive behavior or substance. It's the whispers that start it. And that's why I have to watch them. You know what it calls us to do that in step 10. Let me watch those whispers. Here we have Emily the cat. There we go. And so I have to watch those whispers, because when I pick up a fear, guess what? I'm just as powerless as picking up that fear as I am picking up my first drink or my first piece of sugar. It's not the 10th fear that gets me drunk. It's the first fear. And I think the same can be said for judgment. You know, it's not the first judgment that I have of you that leads me down a path. Or excuse me, it is the first judgment. It's, you know, it's not the 10th judgment I've had of you. It's the first judgment. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap, or even an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. You know, am I controlling you or my environment to make sure I'm okay? And, you know, I have seen how the problem with that is that I continue to box myself in as my fears grow. Right. As I collect more fears, my reality gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. You know, and that shows up for me as if only I could have X, if only I could, you know, go get a massage, you know, like I need to relax. Right. Let me get a massage. Well, there's not enough massages in the world to make me okay. You know, where am I trying to find that peace and ease, that ease and comfort that only alcohol could give me, when really I just need to lean into my higher power. Now, sometimes I don't know how to do that. And that's where I think fellows come in here, is because the people that I have in my life show me the path that they have taken. And sometimes it starts me on my path. And sometimes my path doesn't look exactly like theirs. And that's exactly as it should be, but at least it's a good place to start. So, it says, in our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism, which proposes a shield to shield the sick man from temptation, is doomed to failure. If an alcoholic tries to shield himself, he may succeed for a time, but he usually winds up with a bigger explosion than ever. And that is very true for me. Once I start controlling my disease, then I'll explode. And it comes out in really bizarre ways. We have tried these methods. These attempts to do the impossible have always failed. And I have to see that as well in my inventory, is that all of the methods that I have tried have failed. And on my best thinking, it gets me between a rock and a hard place. And I also think that's a little bit where God wants us to be, because when I'm between a rock and a hard place with whatever addiction I'm dealing with, the only place for me to turn is to God. And until I see that, there's no hope of my recovery. So, because I'll always, if I just do something, if I just do this thing, then I'll be okay. So I think that's all I got for today. I don't know how long that was. So
thank you, Tina. That was great. I'm going to stop the recording. Hold on a second.